Just so you know, the thoughts and opinions expressed on tonight's Raw Talk do not reflect the thoughts or opinions of the staff or management of M88 or of Calvary of Albuquerque. And welcome to Raw Talk here on M88. As always, I am your host, Yo, and we're in for what I'm sure will be a magical evening. No pun intended. Well, actually, the pun was intended, so I take that back. This past Saturday, yesterday, actually, is when the seventh and final book in the Harry Potter series was released to much fanfare. It was in the news almost constantly during the week, and I happened to go and check out the midnight release party. I was just kind of curious to see what it was going to be like, and I can honestly say I've never seen so many black cloaks in my entire life. There's a lot of people there who are dressed up, very interesting costumes, and depending on which bookstore you went to, they had different activities going on. I heard some of the smaller locally owned bookstores kind of went more out, full out with activities, and one of them had live owls, apparently. I checked out one of the national chains, and it was a little more low-key, but they had some stuff going on. I was just curious to see, you know, what the atmosphere was going to be like, and honestly, the atmosphere seemed tired because it was like 11:30 at night, so... It was not quite what I was expecting. Now, as you've probably heard, the Harry Potter series, one of the most popular book series to come along in a long, long time. Every title has been number one on various bestseller lists. The pre-orders for the seventh book, depending on who you talk to, topped 1.6 million to almost 2 million pre-orders, which is a hefty sum of pre-orders for any book. And the first printing for The Deathly Hallows, the name of the seventh book, is 12 million, one of the largest first printings of any book in history. In total, the books have been translated into 64 languages. Over 325 million copies have been sold worldwide. And also, as you know, there's films and video games. And the films, the first four films, have already made over $1 billion worldwide. And the most recent one, The Order of the Phoenix, had a hefty opening as well. And J.K. Rowling is one of the first billionaire authors in the world. So this is big business. It has permeated our culture. And tonight, what we want to talk about, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is there anything redeeming in the Harry Potter stories, or is this something that we should wholly avoid? Our guest tonight is Marcia Montenegro. She is from Christian Answers for the New Age. She's actually a former astrologist, right, Marcia? You're a former astrologist? Yeah.
Yes, and I was an astrologer and taught astrology, too.
And I was perusing your website the first time we had you on. I noticed that you had some very interesting articles about Harry Potter, and so when this topic came up, you seemed like a natural fit for someone who would have some interesting insights to share when it comes to this. And just, you know, to be fair, I also noticed you had some great articles on Star Wars and, you know, other things that have permeated our culture with something other than a Christian worldview. But thank you so much for joining us again tonight. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be on again.
Well, why don't we just start off real quick and doing that by having you explain kind of what your view is on Harry Potter before we start, you know, asking people to call in. And certainly you can do that, 505-338-5790. But explain to everyone your take on Harry Potter, especially considering, you know, the background from which you have come from before you became a Christian.
Right. Well, I do have some concerns with Harry Potter. I realize that the stories are very intriguing. There's humor in them. There's adventure. The characters are well done. I think she's very good with the dialogue between people. But my concerns are with, first of all, you have the hero, Harry, and his friends are in a school where they are learning very specific things that are all related to occult practices that are specifically denounced and forbidden by God, casting spells, divination, and using charms and amulets is also mentioned in at least two places in the Bible, and that comes up in Harry Potter from time to time. So you have a boy practicing things that are considered evil, and yet he's the hero, and he's using these things to fight the bad guys. So that's one of my major concerns. There are specific practices mentioned in the book, such as astrology, the runes, arithmancy, which is a form of numerology, and then numerology is specifically mentioned when Harry gives Hermione a book on numerology in the fifth book, and she's real excited to get it and tells him, oh, you know, I've been wanting that. And I actually one day found a website. I forgot how I did the search or how I came across it, but it was a website purportedly written by Hermione to children telling them how to do numerology, how great it was. So that was, you know, to me, one of the examples of the negative fallouts of the book. And my other concern is that I don't think there's a real moral center in the books. Harry is often lies, quite often, and often it's just for his own gain. It's not always to save someone's life, but it's just to do things he wants to do or because he's getting into trouble. But the thing is, it's one thing to lie, but he doesn't feel remorse for it, and he often doesn't suffer consequences for it. So that's another concern, and there's a real undermining of authority throughout the books. People in authority are usually painted very negatively. They're usually unlikable characters, or they're villains. And I think this is one reason the books are popular, is that, you know, kids, I think, tend to enjoy books maybe that take pot shots at authority figures.
Yeah.
I think that's probably a natural a natural reaction, but I don't think it's a good Christian, you know, I mean, not all authority is good, but we are commanded by God to obey those in authority, even you know, pagan governments, which is what the early church had to do. So, you know, those are some of my concerns right there.
All right. Well, fortunately, we're able to get our other guest to join us, John Granger, who's actually an author who wrote a book a couple of years ago called Finding God in Harry Potter, a title which alone would probably have a lot of people a little defensive about. But he's a guy who originally was very against Harry Potter until he took a closer look at it. So, John Granger, thank you so much for joining us. And we talked to you a couple years ago, back when your book first came out. Man, a lot has changed since then. But I'm glad I was able to track you down, that you could join us for tonight's show. And why don't you just tell everyone a little bit about what you discovered about Harry Potter from your, you know, unique background?
Oh, am I on, you?
Yeah, you sure are, John.
That's great. I can barely hear you. I'm glad that I'm on. And it's great to be here. I just finished reading to my three youngest kids the latest version. I hope I don't spoil the book for anybody, but it has a really wonderful ending. I started reading these books because a friend of mine who had orange hair, a tattoo on her neck, and a stud in her tongue and everything said, John, you have to read these books. You know, they're about witches and wizards, and they're about a school for sorcery. And I thought, this is a no-brainer. I don't want these things anywhere near my children. So I told my wife, this is in the year 2000, you know, don't ever bring one of these books into our house or allow the kids to read these things. Nobody in our church had ever talked about it. And so our pediatrician, a good Baptist woman, gives my oldest daughter a copy of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. So, homeschooling daddy that I am, I decide, well, I'll read this book to explain to her why we don't read trash like this. I read the book and, of course, find out very quickly that the woman is a classicist, that she is a Christian, and that the books have very edifying, not only edifying Christian symbolism, but edifying messages and morality for everybody. So the next day I told her she could read the book. In fact, she had to read the book and started reading it aloud to the other children.
Wow. Well, that's really fascinating. And, you know, I remembered when we first had you on just how intriguing it was, your background so far as these books go. Now, let me ask both of you, because this was something that came up when I was trying to track down some guests for this show, and I was actually kind of shocked at the response of one of the people I was asking to be on the show. And I was saying, you know, let's do Harry Potter. And one guy said, oh, Harry Potter, you know, that's a moot thing. No one's really interested in it. It's a passe. It's not that big of a deal anymore. And I thought that was a very interesting reaction, because one of two things. A, either, you know, most people didn't care anymore, but, you know, looking at the pre-sales for the book and how the movies are doing, there still seems to be some interest in it. Or B, maybe Christians have just given up on, you know, this particular battle, that they just got tired of trying to do anything with Harry Potter and just sort of, you know, oh, well, I guess he's here to stay, and sort of gave up on it. So let me ask you, Marcia and John, let me just introduce Marcia Montenegro from Christian Answers for the New Age, who is a former astrologist before she became a Christian. So, Marcia, let me start with you. I mean, what do you think? Do you think this is still an important issue, or have Christians just kind of become complacent and very accepting of Harry Potter as is and got tired of you know, making a big deal out of it?
I think Christians have become more complacent about it. I do. I think because the popularity of the books has gone on for so many years that, and I think other things have come in our culture that are even, to me, darker. I consider Harry Potter very dark, you know, that are even darker. And I think that it's very hard to take a stand in our culture on things like this. It makes you look sometimes foolish. It makes you look narrow-minded. And I think people get tired of trying to take a stand. And so it's easier to give in. It's easier to rationalize, easier to go along with the culture. And I think the church in many ways is doing that, not just on this issue. So I think, I do think, and I think I've even noticed it since the earlier books first came out. So that's my own opinion. I do think they have gotten more complacent and less willing to take a stand on things.
Well, it has been a decade almost since the first book came out, mm-hmm. at least in the UK, and so that's been a long time that this issue has mm-hmm. been around, and some people might have just kind of slowly, oh yeah, that's still around, oh, I forgot about that. It's kind of interesting how, you know, the Christian pendulum swings back and forth for us. We get really excited about something, and then, oh, that's bored, I'm going to do this mm-hmm. over here. Now, John, what do you think about how Christians kind of handle Harry Potter? Because, again, it was a very hot topic for the longest time. And, you know, you even had Christians doing book burnings and whatnot, and a lot of the people...
Here's the thing. I don't think it's a matter of complacency. You still see Christians get very upset about books like Philip Pullman's books that are flat-out atheism. Certainly, my church, I'm an Orthodox Christian or whatever, and we're not soft on the occult by any means. But the reason people have pretty much given up this issue is because of three things. One... first, the objections were largely, most people felt very strongly about this because they hadn't read the books, and they were basically protesting the books in obedience to people they felt had read the books, and then they saw the movies, yo. And when they saw the movies, they realized that these books were about as dangerous as Star Wars. Following on that, and probably more important, is we were told in the late 90s and the beginning part of this millennium that these books were gateways to the occult, and we were going to see a huge upsurge in kids joining the occult and this and that. And there has only been a decline in real-world numbers in the occult. The only people who say that the occult is growing are those occult groups. Real-world sociologists like Massimo Intravigna and others have documented that the occult is actually in a decline. So when people keep throwing up these scare tactics about the world going, you know, the kids, we all have concerns about our kids joining the occult. Certainly I do. But these books don't have anything to do with the occult. The magic inside these books is not invocational sorcery. The magic in these books is incantational story, which require a Christian worldview for the magic actually to work. And so we haven't seen what these naysayers and the Harry haters have said had to happen. And as that's come to pass, it's pretty hard to keep saying there's this horrible danger when the danger never comes.
Right. Well, and let me also just be clear for people who are listening, you know, we're not debating Harry Potter here. My goal is, you know, for Marcia and John to present their views on this so that you will be informed to make your own decision. That's what Raw Talk is all about, to give you good information so that you know why you believe what you believe, not because someone else told you what to believe, but because you have had a chance to hear good information from various sources and you can make your own decision. So I don't want anyone, you know, say, oh, wow, this is going to get interesting. We're going to get into that. It's not going to be that kind of debate tonight, but we wanted to discuss this from various viewpoints in order for people to be well-informed. Now, Marcia, let me ask you, what do you see specifically? Let's get a little specific here with the books. What do you see specifically in these books that have some concerns for you as someone who had experience in the occult before you became a Christian? And why do you think, A, they might be dangerous for the general public, and B, they might be dangerous for Christians?
Sure. Well, not only was I involved in the occult, but I had lots of clients as an astrologer and friends who were witches. They were pagans, witches, psychics, tarot card readers, as well as on the New Age of the Spectrum, followers of various Eastern gurus and things. And I think the books, well, I mentioned some things specifically earlier. I mentioned astrology. I mentioned the use of amulets and charms, casting spells. I do not think the distinction between invocational and incantational magic is valid, the distinction that Mr. Granger makes, because incantations are a part of the occult. They are done with a belief that you are bringing in a power to make something happen. And there's always a belief in some kind of power in the occult, whether it's with words or rituals. A wand is actually used in the occult. It's a tool. In ritual magic, they use tools they believe are imbued with power, and they see it as an extension of themselves. They don't necessarily think the object has a power of its own, but they think it is imbued with a power and an extension of themselves, and it's part of the way to do magic. Although there are different views on magic, so you're not going to get a consistent thing. So I think overall, the books give a picture of doing specific magic things. I mean, there's no reason, if this wasn't important in the books and if it wasn't really about the occult, why have amulets, charms, astrology, potions? Potions are used in spells today by people in the occult, astrology, etc. Now, my thing is, I don't call myself, first of all, I'm not a Harry hater, and I don't like labels given to me because of my stand. I take a very, very solid biblical view on this, and believe me, it's not easy saying that I have problems with Harry Potter. it's not a fun thing to do, but the main danger that I think exists from the Harry Potter books is the desensitization in the culture. And whether an individual who reads the books gets interested in the occult or not, you know, who knows? That could happen. I do get emails from some young emailers who apparently don't look at my website very carefully and ask me if I can help them do white magic or magic. I've had many of them reference Harry Potter. I've even had them ask me if I knew a witchcraft school like Hogwarts. So apparently it sparks an interest, and even J.K. Rowling, I believe, said that she got letters on this. So it does spark an interest in some kids. But I think overall it's a desensitization of the culture, not just non-Christians, but maybe even Christians, to the occult. So that's one of the things that I see with it. And, you know, I just don't think we can ignore that.
Now, let me ask you, John, and then after we do this, we'll go ahead and open up the phone lines for people who might have questions or comments for either one of you. But, John, let me ask you, What have you seen in the books that made you specifically think, you know, there's some Christian themes here? There's actually some redeeming stuff going on, not all that different from, say, Narnia or Lord of the Rings or any of these other things that always get brought up when you bring up Harry Potter. For some reason, whenever you bring up Harry Potter, people have to compare it to Narnia, so on and so forth. What do you see when you look at these books that, as a Christian, you know, didn't give you pause, but actually had you very excited about the books?
Well, in every single book, Yo, Harry dies a figurative death and rises from this death in the presence of a symbol of Christ. In the last book, he offers himself as a sacrifice, an innocent sacrifice, to defeat the evil.
Careful, don't give too much away, because I haven't read it yet, and a lot of people haven't.
The first time I read the books, this one everybody should know, because in the first movie, it's the first book. Harry is out in the Forbidden Forest with Draco Malfoy and friends, and they come across a dying unicorn, and this snake-like figure drinks its blood, and it turns and is about to attack Harry, and he's rescued by a centaur named Firenze. And he explains to Harry that drinking the blood of a unicorn will save your life, no matter how badly injured you are or whatever, but that if you drink it unworthily, you'll be damned. Well, I read this, and I just sort of thought, whoa. You know, she's quoting almost word for word from St. Paul's in 1 Corinthians. If you know that the serpent is a bad guy, and you know that the unicorn is used in traditional iconography, tapestry, story, as a symbol of Christ, here's a serpent drinking the body of, you know, the blood of Christ, and is damned for drinking him unworthily, but it's a life-saving thing to drink the blood of Christ. Hmm. I thought, wow. I didn't know anything about her at all, but I thought, one, she's a Christian, and two, she's smuggled the gospel into her storytelling so powerfully. And it's a wonderfully, you know, dramatic scene, obviously. And yet, right there, you have an echo of St. Paul's teaching about, you know, how you come to Christ. Hmm. It's really an amazing scene. That's when I thought to myself, whoa, my kid has to read this book. Hmm. Then when I read the rest of the stories, and you see that she has this hero's journey formula that includes a resurrection in every book. It's very edifying drama. It's excellent literature.
Now, we're going to go ahead and take your questions, and just so people know when they call in, or with two guests on the line, or phone lines are kind of crowded, so when you call in, we're going to take your question and then ask you to hang up, and you can listen to the answer, just so we can keep people rotating through. 505-338-5790. If you have a question or comment that you would like to share as we talk about this Harry Potter issue and how we should deal with it as Christians, that's 505-338-5790. And also, let me make a qualifying statement so far as, you know, my mentioning I haven't read the last book yet. I started reading the books mainly because so many people were talking about them, and like John Granger was saying, I didn't want to, you know, enter the fray in this particular thing without having read the material. It's the same with, you know, stuff like The Purpose-Driven Life and The Prayer of Jabez and all these things that become phenomena. It's something like I'm not going to really try and take a side until I've read them. And so I just felt it was incumbent upon me as a Christian to read them so I know what people were talking about. And so now the final book is coming out, and it's kind of like you get to one point, it's like, well, see how it ends and see if there's any big surprises so far as how the story wraps up. But if you got a question or comment, 505-338-5790. Now, Marcia, I've had a burning question for you that I've wanted to ask for a while, and I don't know, and John, I want your feedback on this too. I don't know how into video games you guys are, but let me just say, you know, the new movie came out, The Order of the Phoenix, and along with that, they had a video game version. Now, there's this new system out called the Nintendo Wii, and Marcia, are you familiar with the Nintendo Wii at all?
What I understand of it is that it's like you actually make movements.
Right.
Physical movements that match are matched on the screen or something.
Right.
Right?
Right. So, when this system came out, you know, a lot of people were thinking, oh, you know, natural for lightsabers and all this type of stuff. And, of course, Harry Potter. Now, in the game, I got it and played it. I do game reviews for a Christian website, and this seemed like a natural thing to review because I'm sure there will be Christians who will be curious about it, especially since you're doing motions. Now, in the game, for various, you know, incantations or spells or whatever you call them, you know, where you repair stuff or levitate stuff or, you know, do wizard duels or anything, you actually do the motions with the controller. Like, you'll flick it forward to do something, or you'll rotate it clockwise, or rotate it counterclockwise, or flick it towards you, or use both controllers to, push up, and then you move them around while something's floating in midair. And the thing that occurred to me about this is, wow, you know, if people had concerns about the books, if people had concerns about watching the movies, well, here's an interactive form of entertainment where you're now actually making the motions. And, I don't know if you've actually tried it, and I'm going to guess that you haven't, but just hearing the description, what's your reaction to the idea that now there's a video game where, you know, I'm sure these aren't necessarily actual, because I haven't levitated anything in my house with my Wiimote, but that you're actually doing these kinds of motions. What kind of effect do you think that might have on people so far as the Harry Potter phenomena goes?
Well, if it involves doing any of the occult arts, casting spells or anything, yeah, I would be quite concerned. I have a friend who a few years ago, her son was about 8, and she said that on the playground at school, the kids were playing casting spells. I mean, that was the game they were playing. And that was very disturbing to her. And I find it disturbing, too, because when you start taking this stuff lightly, or you take it as just entertainment or as a game, which is exactly how it is promoted in our culture, primarily through entertainment, your guard goes down. And if kids see it as exciting or interesting as they get older and they meet people who actually do these things, you know, it's not going to seem as alarming to them, or it's not as likely to seem as alarming. And I did want to say something in regards to an earlier comment. I personally don't think the occult is decreasing at all. First of all, I think it's very hard to measure. But I think the one way that you can sort of track it is by the number of books that are sold. And occult books, book on witchcraft, and things like that have been increasing steadily. And not only that, but certain publishers, are specifically marketing them to younger and younger audiences. And a trade representative of the largest occult publisher in this country admitted it in a publisher's weekly interview. So, I don't think that the occult, and my ministry doesn't see it going down. You know, I see more and more of it in my ministry. But, yeah, I'm not happy about the idea of an interactive video game if it involves imitating some of the practices. I don't know if it does or not. I can't really imagine what it's like because I haven't actually seen how this thing works.
If you get a chance, you should probably check it out. I think you might find it interesting to see how it kind of being taken to the next level. And John, let me ask you, I mean, have you played any of the Harry Potter video games? And specifically, when I was playing this video game, you know, it's based off of the book. It's based off the movie, not off the book. So a lot of the plot and stuff was shortened just like it was for the movie, which I thought was kind of weird because in a video game you need more stuff to do instead of less. But, you know, they have rights to the films, not to the books. It's all very complicated. Anyway, so I'm sure there's stuff that's been lost in translation. But do you have any thoughts on the video game aspect of the whole Harry Potter craze?
Well, I don't have any experience with it, certainly. My friends like to joke that I'm just accusing art and electricity away from the Mennonites. I don't have a television set, and my kids don't play computer games, and the younger ones don't have any access to the computer at all. We're just a reading type family. So this whole thing, in terms of one reason I'm sensitive to it is I don't like screened images. Period. Hmm. But the whole idea of interactive screens and this and that is just another breakdown in terms of how kids understand reality. I'm much prefer they're in their imagination, this and that, rather than doing this kind of thing. But a connection between, you know, making gestures with your wand on a screen versus and then saying, well, maybe this is what someone will do in the real world, is really nonsensical. My kids are running around today. We spent 16 hours yesterday reading Deathly Hallows, and they were running around today, you know, casting spells, this, that, and the other. We sat down to dinner. You know, nobody tried to pass the food by plucking up their fork, whatever, and waving this and that. There's a real kids are smarter than we give them credit for. Most video games that kids are playing nowadays involve a gun of some kind. Forget a wand. And yet we don't see kids running out into the street with weapons just to do that. If they do, that's a reason to get rid of video games, but it's not a reason to talk about Harry Potter. If people misuse something or adapt it and misuse it, that doesn't mean you throw away the original thing. If that were true, then because of Jonestown and other horrors in terms of Christian cult groups, we wouldn't read Scripture.
Hmm.
Harry Potter is edifying reading. It's in the tradition of English literature. I can't tell you how edifying and challenging the end is. I hope you get the book soon, you.
Well, I borrow it from my friends because they buy it and they like read it in one day, and then I don't have to spend any money on it. And it's like I'm reading a new book because they've only had it for a day. So that's usually how I came across them. I just borrowed them from people.
Oh boy, Joanne Rowling said in the year 2000 that she wouldn't talk about her faith because if she did, all fans aged 10 to 60 would see how the books were going to end. And then she also said that to someone else who asked her about her faith, she said, come back to me after the end of the seventh book. And you won't even have to ask me questions then because you'll have read the answers to your questions in the seventh book. And except for the fact that I can't spoil the ending for all your friends who are listening, really the Harry Potter debate in terms of Joanne Rowling's Christian faith and stuff is over.
Hmm.
It's an amazingly powerful, it's not quite Aslan on the Stone Table, but it's pretty doggone close.
Well, and since you bring that up, let me ask you, Marcia, and then I'll come back to you, John, so far as how Harry Potter compares to something like Narnia, because that always gets brought up anyway, so let's talk about that. The lion, the witch, and the wardrobe, it's in the title, and yet Christians very much embrace C.S. Lewis's work, who we all know is a great Christian thinker, but there is a lot of magic, there is a lot of other references to other myths and lore and legends, and I've heard even one person say, this is obviously not my opinion, but that they saw C.S. Lewis as very much of a mystic because of his fascination with myths and things of that nature, and how he worked lots of different kinds of myths, not just Christianity, but other types of mythologies into his work. But Christians obviously focus on the Christian parallels. So, Marcia, how do you think Narnia compares to something like Harry Potter? Why would maybe one be more acceptable than the other? Or if you are going to say and have a biblical worldview that, magic, sorcery, witches, anything along these lines, is something that we should avoid, then why would we embrace one and not the other? What are your thoughts on that particular aspect of the debate?
Well, first of all, I think whether an author is Christian or not is irrelevant.
Hmm.
I really don't take that into consideration. I don't care if J.K. Rowling is a Christian or not. I'm going to evaluate the books, and I don't see a Christian message in it as Mr. Granger does. I think you have to read into it to see that. That's my view. Whether she's a Christian or not to me is just irrelevant. You have to look at the books and what's in them and evaluate it biblically and rationally. Now, as far as Narnia goes, after your very long question there.
Sorry.
You're going to get sort of a short answer from me, I think, because actually I've only read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I just read that one book. I have not read the whole set of books. I've read parts of one of the books towards the end there. But I've never gotten around to reading them all. Now my understanding of Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe is the witch is bad, right? The white witch is evil. She's not good. so in that case, I would say it's not like Harry Potter, where practicing witchcraft is a good thing, or practicing sorcery is really what they're doing. Not wet witchcraft in the sense of witchcraft, the modern religion, but witchcraft in the generic sense of the term. I also understand with, at least in the one book I read, to me there was a very clear-cut line between moral good and moral evil, and I don't see that in Harry Potter. I think, like I said earlier, I don't think it has a moral center to it. So those differences I see, but that's very limited because, now I did read Tolkien. I've read Tolkien's trilogy, but I have not read Narnia.
Okay. Well, John, let's bring that over to you as someone who reads. You know, what do you see so far as the similarities and the difference go? If you're going to say one thing about the other, does it apply to the other? You know, what's your take on the whole, how whenever Harry Potter gets brought up, Narnia eventually gets pulled into the mix, as does Tolkien and some of these other fantasies. What's your take on that?
Well, I have read all the Narnia books several times to my kids. You should know that C.S. Lewis was criticized pretty severely in the 50s for the magic inside the books.
Mm-hmm.
And he commented famously to one correspondent that, really, you have to go back to your fairy tales, he says, and you understand that the real magic and the strongest magic are counterspells, and that all of modernity, all of our life here in the 20th and now the 21st century, we're basically under the spell of materialism and naturalism. And magic and stories raises us up to a world which is very different, a world of truth and love and beauty, things that aren't of matter and energy, and that this magic actually fosters a worldview that allows for things which are of the spirit. And that's what he saw. All of his work was about doing was basically smuggling the gospel, instructing while delighting, to bring a Christian worldview to people. And Rowling is definitely within this Inkling tradition. Not only does she have a 7-book series, which is an echo of Narnia and the Lord of the Rings, which is not a trilogy, but actually, if you include The Hobbit, it's actually 7 books. The reason that they do that, what Rowling has done is she has laced these books not only with concerns of our times, beliefs, you know, postmodern concerns about racism and prejudice, and concerns about misuses of authority in government, in media, in schools. But she's also critiqued the postmodern worldview so that she does have room for a God. The books are about purity of soul, the power of love, love's victory over death, our end in a resurrection. And she uses all the traditional symbols that Lewis uses. For example, if your other guest has read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, she knows that the four Pevensey children leave that world while they're chasing a white stag. And the white stag is a traditional symbol for Christ because the rack comes off its head and grows back or whatever. And they chase the symbol of Christ from the world where Aslan is the Christ back to the world of Christ. They chase the white stag back to Christ. Well, in Harry Potter, the white stag appears again. And the white stag, well, Harry uses the spell, the Patronus charm, to drive away these horrible creatures called Dementors. And he uses the Latin words, expecto patronum. Expecto is from the Latin Nicene Creed for I await the resurrection of the dead, whatever, I await. And patronum is the word not only for little father or patron, but for Savior. He says, I await my Savior, and out of his wand comes this symbol of Christ that we know from Narnia and other English literature books. And this is the thing which saves him. Now, when you see that, and you know that Rowling loves C.S. Lewis, she says she can't be in the same room with a Narnia book and not pick it up and read it. You see that, and then people critique her, and they don't critique C.S. Lewis. I have to laugh, because C.S. Lewis in 1938 wrote a book called Out of the Silent Planet.
Yeah.
And it's a Christian allegory. It's fairly bald. It's not especially opaque.
No.
And 37 reviewers read the book, and only 2 of them in 1938 England figured out that it was a Christian book.
Huh.
Because C.S. Lewis at that point hadn't given the lectures that became mere Christianity, and he wasn't known as a Christian.
Hmm.
Joanne Rowling is writing books which are only slightly more opaque in their symbolism and their messages, and yet people today, because she's not, one, probably, she's not a man, and two, she's not a in-your-face type Christian, they're saying these books are somehow evil. I mean, these books are a great gateway to English literature, and the mail that I get also suggests that they're a great gateway to the faith.
Well, that's really interesting. I hadn't heard that about, you know, people reviewing Out of the Silent Planet, which is actually, that whole space trilogy is one of my favorites from C.S. Lewis. Now, let me ask you this, Marcia, and then I'll come back to you, John, on this. You know, one of the things that gets brought up a lot, and maybe this is where some of the complacency has set in, and again, let me just say, you know, I think Christians, a lot of times, we're very picky and choosy about, you know, where we're willing to make a stand and where we're not, and we'll be very strong on this issue and not so much on that issue. you know, we'll say, oh, homosexuality is the worst sin ever. Greed's okay, but, you know, in God's eyes, they're all sin. And you know, we're very, you know, interesting in how we, you know, pick and choose stuff that happens. And one of the things that gets brought up is like, oh, Harry Potter, it's just entertainment. This isn't real. It's just, you know, for the fun of it. And yeah, I understand there's magic and stuff in there, but, you know, it's fantasy. So it's harmless. And I'm sure you've heard that, not only about, Harry Potter, but I've read some of your articles that you wrote about Star Wars as well, which I thought had some great insights so far as Star Wars goes. But, you know, we're talking about Harry Potter. So how do you respond to people say, you know, maybe you're taking it too seriously, it's just for fun?
Yeah, I have heard that quite a bit. Well, my response is, I think that's one of the primary ways that the occult is presented to this culture. You know, Satan is always on the attack. He is always trying to, you know, work through the world and through the culture to undermine Christianity, to undermine God, to undermine the message of the gospel. And I think we see that in a lot of ways. I mean, drugs and, you know, all kinds of things going on. But I think that the fact that occult terms and concepts are presented in a lot of entertainment, and I have a whole book about this called Spellbound, The Paranormal Seduction of Today's Kids.
Which was a good book. I mean, I had a chance to read it, and that's what we talked about last time, and opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Yeah, thanks. And I enumerate several examples in there. So what I say is, yes, it's entertainment, but we have to look at the content of the entertainment, and we have to look at the message. I mean, I remember when I was young, things that I saw in movies and books, you know, did not have people who were doing, I mean, I wasn't in a Christian home. I want to emphasize that. My father was an agnostic, very intellectual man. And my mother was a nominal Christian, and I was not a Christian for sure. But, you know, the kind of things I see in entertainment for kids today is so dark compared to what I read and saw in, you know, movies or cartoons as a child.
Yeah, you just got to look at Saturday morning.
There isn't even a comparison. I mean, it's changed so much. And even since I've become a Christian, which was the end of 1990, I have seen very dramatic increase in the culture and openness to the occult. I mean, now I remember I started talking about Wicca in 1995, and Christians didn't know what I was talking about. Now some do. There's still some that don't know what Wicca is, but but you know, there's almost that apathy setting in. You know, almost like, well, okay, yeah, now we know it's here. These kind of things are really based on evil. And I wanted to say something about the Patronus because I see it completely differently from Mr. Granger. When I read the episode in the book, it reminded me of conjuring a thought form, which is done in both the occult and the New Age, and which I was taught how to do. And when you conjure a thought form is a quasi-independent entity, sometimes considered a spirit, that you conjure for protection. And if it takes the form of an animal, it's sometimes considered a familiar spirit. And these are real things that people actually do. I mean, this is not a fairy tale thing. This is like actual real occult practices. And I think one reason Christians are desensitized to the occult or getting apathetic is because a lot of them don't realize that the occult really exists, and they don't realize people are really engaged in it, seriously engaged in it. And it's very dark and it's very evil, and people can get into it because it's intriguing, but then you get in over your head, and it's a lot easier to get in than to get out. And I deal with people who get in it, and I deal with people who are trying to get out of it all the time in my ministry. So it's a very real thing for me. So it's very hard for me to accept something in entertainment that makes light of the kind of things I see that are destroying people.
And you're absolutely right about Saturday morning cartoons. I'm so glad that Looney Tunes is now on DVD so that I can watch them. Of course, you know, my wife still says, they're getting anvils smashed on their heads. How is this good? It's like, well, I don't know. It's got to be better than some of the alternatives. Now, John, let me ask you, along the similar lines, I don't know if people have addressed this to you, but have you heard people say, dude, It's just entertainment. You're taking all this, Christian allegory, Christian themes thing a little too far. Everything in the world doesn't have to, reflect a Christian worldview. And some people might get offended by that. And they might say, it's just entertainment. Just relax and enjoy it. It doesn't always have to point back to Christ. I mean, how have you dealt, or if you've not heard, then I guess you haven't dealt with it, but has anyone asked you along the same lines, it's just for fun, you're taking it way too serious?
Well, certainly when you explore Harry Potter at the depth that I have in unlocking Harry Potter, Five Keys for the Serious Reader, and get involved with things like the literary alchemy that she borrows from Shakespeare and C.S. Lewis. The space trilogy you mentioned is a big alchemy piece of work. When you start talking about literature at that level, people say, "Oh, John, this is just a beach read. It's a kid's book or whatever."
Right.
So, what if the author says that alchemy sets the magical parameters for the whole series? Yeah. And certainly, everything in the book is not a pointer to Christ. I wrote the book Looking for God in Harry Potter, basically, back in 2002, as an answer to some of the outrageous things that were being said. I mean, really, the books are an introduction to literature, not an introduction to the occult. Seriously, if you've ever taken a stick and tried to produce a Patronus by saying Expecto Patronum, you'll learn very quickly that you can't produce these things. That this is an edifying, imaginative experience. Now, an historian of religion named Mircea Eliade talked about entertainments in a secular culture, and he says that these entertainments, be they books or movies, this and that, all serve a mythological or a religious function. They draw people out of themselves. They don't really have religious experiences because they've been immunized against any kind of faith. So these stories, excuse me.
That's all right.
These stories serve a religious purpose. And what's interesting is English literature is a Christian tradition, because it's just like the Tibetan literature is a Buddhist tradition. So the whole tradition is full of Christians writing for other Christians to edify them in the faith. When you get a writer like Joanne Rowling, a confessed Presbyterian, she baptizes her children, etc., and she knows this tradition backwards and forward, and she's writing a book, what you get then is what you can call the inkling effect, is that, yes, these books serve a mythological function, but if you fill them up with Christian meaning and Christian messages and Christian images, like Rowling has, like C.S. Lewis does, then they serve not only to prepare people for the faith, but to strengthen them in the faith. Entertainments can serve a very positive purpose. Certainly, in my family, I've been accused of being borderline paranoid about what my kids watch and don't watch, and what they read and they don't read, or anything but passive to this kind of thing. Having said that, when we find something which is positive, which strengthens them in their core beliefs, then we grab hold of those things. We still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you still there, Marcia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that click, so I was wondering too.
Well, I didn't hang up, so I think we're all good. So.
Okay.
Sorry about that, John. Carry on. John, you still there?
Yeah, I'm on a friend's phone. I'm afraid that I'm overstaying my welcome on this phone. How much time have we got left, yo?
We got about 10 minutes. I was just about to, after you finish your thought, ask you guys for your concluding thoughts. So I guess we'll go ahead and do that. And John, why don't you share your concluding thoughts so that you can, save your friend's phone time there. And
great.
And what are your parting thoughts for people that you would want them to think about as maybe Harry Potter, goes off and disappears, or maybe the books continue in another form, or, who knows? There's still movies and video games to come, I'm sure. But what are your parting thoughts for people listening about this subject?
Well, really, if you have questions about the quality of these books, the depth of these books, I really encourage you to buy either Looking for God and Harry Potter, the book that Tyndale published in 2004 and updated in 2006, or my own Unlocking Harry Potter, Five Keys for the Serious Reader. In that book, you'll find out, seriously, why these books are so popular, why we like them so much, how they engage us as human beings and people of our own times. And I encourage people to read these books, especially having just finished the last novel in the series. Very hard for me to think that anybody who comes to these books with an open mind won't walk away from these books saying, these books were written to prepare people for the faith or to support them in their own faith.
All right. And, you know, Marcia, what would you say for people, you know, as we get ready for this final goodbye maybe to Harry Potter, or maybe, you know, it'll continue to be a part of the culture, or, you know, whatever the case may be, what are some parting thoughts that you'd have for our listeners so far as what they should consider?
Well, I would say really to use God's word as the authority, you know, not alchemy or not something like that, but use God's word as the authority. And when God specifically forbids things like casting spells, divination, you know, astrology, Deuteronomy 18, 10 through 12, Isaiah 47, things like that, Galatians and Galatians 5, it says sorcery is one of the sins of the flesh. I think it's very clear that those kind of things are hated by God, and therefore, if you are a fan of Harry Potter and you know, you're reading the books, to keep that in mind, and not to, if you come across these things in real life, not to think that they can be fun, or intriguing, or can really, you know, do something good for you, that they're actually very negative, even though they're presented in a positive light, in my opinion. And actually, you can conjure up a thought for him. I had a spirit guide for a number of you. I had a spirit guide for about 15 years, and was more than a thought form because it was a real spirit, and of course it was a demon. Of course, I thought it was a wise, enlightened, you know, being who had advanced to another level. And this is very common with people who are psychics, astrologers, witches, and other people like that. They usually have guides. They just call them guides. And all my friends had guides. You know, this is just the norm. So, you know, I know that that kind of thing exists. So I would tell people to be careful and not to venture into that territory outside of the books. And also to consider getting my book, Spellbound, The Paranormal Seduction of Today's Kids. Or if they'd like to read some of my articles on Harry Potter on my website, it's www.christiananswersforthenewage.org. So that's my website, and I have several articles there on the books and the movies. I do not have an article on the sixth book yet. I may write an article on that along with the seventh book, which I just got yesterday, but haven't even started reading yet.
You should try doing an article on that video game as well. I'd be intrigued to hear what you think of you know, the whole motion control in a game like Harry Potter.
Right. I don't know how I could do that though when I don't have the technology. I
mean, someone's got to have it nearby that they'd let you borrow.
I'll see if I can find somebody.
You can come over to my house. I'll let you borrow mine. It'll be fine.
Oh, okay.
Well, Marcia.
Over there to Phoenix and from Virginia.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Marcia Montenegro from Christian Answers of the New Age, thanks for joining us. John Granger had to leave because I guess someone else needed to use the phone.
Yeah, that's
poor guy.
Yeah.
That's got to be tough. Well, I was glad that he could join us. I got to say, absolutely fascinating listening to the both of you talk, and I'm just so grateful that I was able to have both of you on, because I think you both did a great job of presenting some very thought-provoking views when it comes to this. And for me, that just gets me all excited, because that's what Raw Talk is all about, to get people thinking. Let me conclude by saying, and hang on, Marcia, I'll say goodbye to you here in just a moment. But let me just say to anyone listening, you know, regardless of what your view may be of Harry Potter, we cannot let that view of Harry Potter cloud the issue of what is a person's relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, regardless if you're like John Granger and you think you can use Harry Potter as a platform for talking about that, well, hey, good. Or if you're like Marcia and say, you know what, it's not a platform for getting there, you avoid it by saying, you know what, skip all that, just go right to the source. You don't need magic or all that type of stuff to touch the divine. God sent his only son to die for your sins so you could have a personal relationship with him. The number one issue always has to come back to pointing people towards Jesus Christ. And let me say, you know, I try not, I have tried for the longest time, really not to talk a whole lot about my opinions about Harry Potter because it's so divisive. And the issue is, you know, there's some people who just can't handle it. And so be very Romans 14 minded. If you know that your particular view on Harry Potter might cause someone else to stumble, keep it to yourself. I gotta admit, I don't like that because it kind of feels restrictive to my fun. But the fact of the matter is, I don't want to cause my brothers and sisters in Christ to stumble, regardless of what my opinion of this issue or that issue or that issue may be. If you know it's going to cause someone else's problem, then it's probably an issue you don't want to discuss with them, and just keep it to yourself. So be very mindful of the people around you when it comes to topics and issues like this. And, you know, safe ground is always a person's relationship with Jesus Christ. And that's where we always need to point them. So I think that'll about do it for this week's topic on Harry Potter. Now, next week, we're going to kind of continue in the paranormal sort of vein as we talk about UFOs. It was the 60th anniversary, right? 60th anniversary of the Roswell incident here in New Mexico. Down there in Roswell, New Mexico, they had a big old taboo about it, you know, a big party about aliens. And we're going to talk with a guy who has some insights on this whole UFO alien phenomena from a biblical point of view. And so we'll discuss that and take your calls and questions as well. And I was going to mention what we're doing in August yet, but I have some surprises that I'm still working on, so we probably won't get there. But also just a reminder, August 4th, the Roman Gold Creative M88 Golf Tournament. If you enjoy ministry like this, something like Raw Talk that M88 does, the programs like Fresh Life with Levi Lusco or Ravi Zacharias that comes on right after Raw Talk, or, you know, the DJs when they share their devotional thoughts and stuff throughout the week, a great way to support that kind of ministry is by playing some golf. Can't top that. August 4th at the Twin Warriors Golf Club, we're going to be playing some golf, and you can support this ministry by just doing your best to keep the ball on the fairway. If you want more details about the Roman Gold Creative M88 Golf Tournament, you can check that out at m88.org. And with that, I think we're going to wrap things up for this magical evening of discussing Harry Potter. Thanks so much for both of my guests. I appreciate them, and I hope it was beneficial to you. We'll see you next week. Until then, have a shway week in the Lord.